You are listening to From the Corner, the NBA podcast, season 2, episode 14. Nick Baldessari and Matt Silich here as always. And Matt, it's our 25th episode. How about that?
Well, it is the 25th episode, but I think it's more important to consider that this is actually the first ever episode, the debut, the pilot of the From the Car NBA podcast, because I'm currently on the road from Chicago to Champaign, and there's nobody on I-57 right now, so just hanging out and decided to talk some NBA. But yeah, it's exciting. It's a nice little milestone for us as we get going here.
Yeah, Matt and I, we just ate lunch actually at Jersey Mike's. We asked them if they would let us record the podcast there, but that was a no-go. But anyway, that was enjoyable. He's on the road, as mentioned. We are going to recap game 4. Basketball is still alive. How about that? The final score, Cavaliers winning 137-116 over the Warriors. You said it was going to be a gentleman's sweep, Matt, and, well, that's the way it's looking right now. I thought it'd be over after game 4, but the Cavaliers, 49 points in the first quarter. I believe it was 85 at halftime. Just ridiculous.
Well, it was a strange game because I was expecting, you know, a gentleman's sweep. I thought that was probably the most likely outcome from game 4. And for those who maybe didn't listen to our last podcast, the gentleman's sweep is you win 3 games and then you kind of take it easy in the 4th game because you're not that serious. And then you put it away in the 5th game at home. But that wasn't really how it felt. Like, it felt like the Warriors were really giving their 100% effort. And the Cavs just beat them. Like, it was weird because you'd expect, okay, maybe the Warriors come out a little flat. They're at 75%, whatever. But I didn't really feel that way. I thought the Warriors played hard from the start to the finish. I mean, they only really pulled their starters from the game with about 2.5 minutes left once they were down, 21 or whatever it was. So it might end up being a gentleman's sweep, but it certainly wasn't the game 4 I expected. The Cavs were just incredible.
Yeah, and then the whole, being on the road, the Warriors were on the road, not at home. Now they come home. There's been a lot of talk about conspiracy theories and whether the NBA is rigged or whatnot, the referees. Honestly, I thought the refs did a poor job that game. They kind of lost control of the game. The inexcusable explanation of Draymond Green not getting ejected because it was just his first technical. For me, I would love Draymond Green to play the whole game, so I don't really care. But the whole fact that on the score sheet at halftime, it said that he already had a technical. But then again, kind of what you were alluding to, it didn't really matter. The Cavaliers just came out and bull rushed them. And I said 85 points. It was 86 points in that first half. And they just put on a show. And this game, the beginning to this game really reminded me of game 3 of last year's finals, where I think it was like 24-9 or 20-9 to start the first quarter. And they just, held on the whole way. And that's what it felt like this time. The Warriors threatened. They pulled within a decent amount in that first quarter, and even later on they were within like 11 or 13, and you felt like, well, a 2-minute run here, the Warriors are back in it. But every run that the Warriors had, the Cavaliers seemed to have a response for it. And again, LeBron James just playing out of his mind, another triple-double, 31 points on 11 of 22 shooting. He hit 3 threes, shot 10 free throws, but also had those 10 rebounds and 11 assists and just 2 turnovers. And then, Matt, Kyrie Irving, again, it's just something with this guy in elimination games. 40 points on 15 of 27 shooting. He was a +7, which is weird. It's actually the lowest out of the stars outside of Tristan Thompson, who's a +3. LeBron was a +32. But Kyrie Irving, man, oh, man, the one-on-one show he put on again. The Warriors just can't shake this guy in elimination games.
Yeah, it's one of those things where Kyrie is just so incredibly talented. He gets going. Your good defense just doesn't matter. It's like it's not even there. I mean, he will hit just about any shot from anywhere on the court. And, in game 3, he was obviously phenomenal as well. But really, that was the result of just some incredible finishing. And he didn't really have his 3-point shot. And he definitely had his 3-point shot in this game. I mean, he ended up, he attempted like 12 threes, 10 plus threes, something like that, and hit a significant number of them. So he was really hot from everywhere. And, like I said, it's just hard to beat that sort of an offensive performance from the Cavaliers. I do want to mention with the officiating, it's one of those things where, for whatever reason with the NBA, people seem to confuse incompetence with a conspiracy. And I think the refs were just incompetent last night. Like, they just did not have a good control of the game from the start. And I don't think that was, because of any bias towards the Cavs or any bias towards the Warriors. I mean, if you go back and look at that first technical foul that they called on Draymond Green, it really does look like they call it on Steve Kerr. I watched it after the game again, and Steve Kerr is much more demonstrative after that.
It was,
I believe, a foul call, you know, at the three-point line or near half court on Draymond Green in some sort of scuffle. And Draymond was pretty upset about the foul, and he voiced that. But he's always that way. You know, I don't think they would have called the technical on him for that mild of an action. And it looked pretty clear to me that they would call it on Steve Kerr, because Kerr was going off on the refs after that first technical. And I think they just had an error in how they reported it to the scorer's table. And so then, of course, they wouldn't call that, you know, weak a technical foul in the second half on Draymond if they'd known that it was his second, because that's just not how the game works. It's not some sort of conspiracy to keep him in. It's just they didn't do a very good job of making sure everybody was on the same page with the first technical. So, yeah, I completely, you know, agree that, you know, people are making way too much of that. And really, we should really just be appreciating the just ridiculous performances by Kyrie Irving and LeBron James in this game.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was Steve Kerr. He rushed the court, and that tends to be an automatic, you know, technical if a coach is on the bench and storms the way he did. I agree. And honestly, both technicals you could have argued shouldn't have been called. Now, the one on Steve Kerr, I understand more so, but the second one was a little iffy too. Why? This is what Draymond does. I mean, referees, you know, over the last, you know, decade, if not more, have kind of eased into that, letting guys, you know, dispute and show frustration or show emotion. Whereas, you know, earlier in the early 2000s, it used to be, hey, if you said something, you got an automatic T. I really want to transition now and talk about the Warriors, because we mentioned that they struggled, and I was really surprised by how poorly Stephen Curry played. And it's not so much that, you know, he played a bad game. He shot 4 of 13, which isn't great, 2 of 9 from 3. But it's more so that energy, which I don't know if it's the physicality or the not having pressure, you're up 3-0. But I know Steve Kerr kind of pinpointed to Steph and said, you know, he didn't come out with the same energy that he normally does. And that was really shocking to me that he didn't have that energy. And while I was disappointed there, I do expect him to have that tonight. We're recording this on Monday night, just a few hours before the game tips off 9 Eastern in the Bay Area. But I do expect Steph Curry to come out with a fire, because that was really what was lacking in game 4.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people say, oh, your hustle doesn't really show up in your stats, whatever. But I think you can see his lack of urgency from the game. Or if it was not a lack of urgency, it was just a really good job of defending him by the Cavaliers. But he only took 13 shots. And I mean, I challenge somebody to go back and look at the last game in which the Warriors had to play well, like they weren't blowing a team out by 20 at halftime or whatever, in which Curry had less than 13 shots. I mean, that's clearly not what you want from him. You want him to be taking just as many shots as Durant. I think Durant took 20 plus in this game, or at least he had a ton of free throws.
Yeah,
as 22.
Well.
Yeah, and so you want Steph to be taking roughly the same number as Durant, and you want Clay to be taking a lot of shots. And I think a lot of it was just that the Cavaliers just had a little bit of an extra edge to their defense, a little bit more physicality, like I was talking about. I thought, you know, this was the first game where I felt like they really kind of unleashed Richard Jefferson and let him play his really physical game. And I think he made a huge difference. And that's something we talked about earlier in the series in terms of, you know, trying to find a guy off the bench who can bring it on both ends. I thought he was useful on both. And they actually used him as a screener a lot, too. There was a really good piece by John Schumann on NBA.com from, I think, today or yesterday, where he discussed how the Cavs were using Richard Jefferson as a screener and really abusing JaVale McGee and Zaza Pachulia in that screening action. So I think the Cavs have actually done a really good job of game planning, and that's why, you know, the next thing I want to get to is, and this also sort of relates to Steph Curry's number of shots, because, you know, I think if he runs more pick and rolls, it's going to be a lot higher naturally, because you just have a higher usage rate. I want to know what you think of how Steve Kerr has coached the last couple games, because I got to say, I'm really not, you know, I think Ty Lue is out coaching him, and that's from a schematic standpoint, and that's not something I would have expected to say going into this series. I think the last two games, Lou has done a really good job of finding better matchups for his guys. The Cavs offense has improved in every single game. They started off scoring like 90 points per 100 possessions in game one. And then I think they're up to 117 or whatever they were in the last game. I mean, something, I think it might've been even higher than that, 130, whatever crazy number they were at, especially in the first half. So, you know, I want to know what you think about how Lou is doing in making adjustments and finding right matchups versus Steve Kerr, who I don't really think is optimizing his talent that well.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And for Lou, you know, schematically, there have been some changes. Overall, I think it's just being physical. I mean, this is what we talked about before the series started. The Cavs needed to be physical, make this an ugly game. And while there were so many points in game four, it still had kind of an ugly feeling to it in terms of, you know, fouls. You had the pushing and shoving. That's basketball, and that's what Ty Lue wanted. He came out and said that he thought the Cavaliers were too nice to start this series. And ultimately, you want to be physical. That is how you get to Steph Curry. That's how you push him around and you get guys uncomfortable. Now, for the Warriors, I'm kind of surprised that they didn't do more pick and rolls with JaVale McGee, because that tends to open up a shot every time for Steph Curry. I also think you got to put Kevin Durant more in the pick and roll with Steph Curry. That just opens up a whole new dynamic to your offense. And I don't know if that means you take the ball away from Draymond Green a little bit more and give it to Steph and have him run the offense just a tad more. But ultimately, it just didn't seem like Steph was getting his openings. And let's be honest, that was an anomaly. Like, that Steph Curry is capable of getting open almost every time, and you just got to put him in the right position. And I think that's what Steve Kerr kind of went away from. And maybe it was because he was really frustrated with how Steph started the game. And you know, I would even argue that this goes back to game three a little bit, but where Steph just shot really well. But ultimately, you got to find your guys open looks. And, you know, maybe there was something to do with the fact that they were down so big so early that you just want to go with the guy that had the hot hand. And that was Kevin Durant early. And Kevin Durant ended up finishing with 35 points. He was a minus 22, but Steph was a minus 25. So I ultimately think you have to get Steph Curry more involved. And that's kind of weird to say, because that's what they've been doing. That's what the offense is about. But kind of like the Cavs did, where they gave the ball to Kyrie Irving more these last two games, that's what you got to do with Steph. Get the ball out of Kevin Durant's hand, get the ball out of Draymond Green's hand, and give it to Steph and let him run the offense. You know, it's not necessarily so much him just shooting more. It's him passing. I know he had 10 assists in game four, but basically just finding him the right spots on the floor to get him going, that's what you got to establish early. And luckily they're at home, so the crowd will be behind them. But that's certainly something that Steve Kerr and the Warriors have to implement in the first quarter, because it tends to be the way. Whoever wins that first quarter seems to win the game.
Yeah, I think you really hit on a couple great points there. And I think this sort of why I find myself asking multiple times a game, like, why is Steph Curry not running pick and rolls right now? I know the Warriors really like, they have sort of an egalitarian offense where they want everybody to be involved, and they run a lot of floppy sets for Klay Thompson, and they try to get him going early on a lot, and they run a lot of, you know, dribble handoffs and other stuff with Draymond Green, and they use him as a screener all the time. They use Zaza as a screener all the time. But what I don't really understand is, where is the Draymond Green Steph Curry pick and roll?
That too.
It's just nowhere. They aren't using it, and every time they do use it, I think it's going to end in a good shot. It doesn't really make much sense to me why they're going away from that. And you know, the Steph Curry Kevin Durant pick and roll is another thing that, for whatever reason, maybe they think with their starting lineup they don't have quite enough shooting off of it. With, you would have Klay, Draymond, and then Zaza somewhere probably in, you know, the baseline or the elbow area. But you know, I just don't understand. They haven't really done the Steph Curry Kevin Durant pick and roll all year. It just hasn't been a staple of the offense. And I don't know if they're trying not to tire these guys out, or if KD's not a good enough screener, but with how talented he is, I mean, this is the finals. Like, you have to use all your best stuff. You have to try everything you possibly can. And I know they're up. They were up 3-0, and I know they're up 3-1. And they have so much talent that they can probably get by just doing their B-plus stuff or their B-minus stuff. You know, playing Zaza at center and JaVale at center for 30 minutes a game. Like, they can probably get away with doing that. But, I mean, this is, like, we saw what happened last year when they didn't go to all, you know, every last resort they could in the last few games.
Yeah.
They sort of played it a little bit cautious. Steve Kerr has a tendency not to push either way on a coaching solution until the Warriors are really in a bad spot. And I just don't, you know, Steve Kerr, I think, is a great coach, but I don't agree with that philosophy of just waiting till the last minute to make a change. I mean, the death lineup with Iguodala in for Zaza Pachulia and Draymond playing center, that's by far the Warriors' best lineup. It's scoring something like 140 points per 100 possessions and giving up like 70 points per 100 possessions, which,
crazy.
For reference, I think the worst offense in the league this year was like probably Philly's at like 90-something points per 100 possessions. So that's just incredible defense and incredible offensive efficiency. And yet they've only gone to it for 17 minutes in the series. It just it doesn't make sense to me that Kerr is so hesitant to play the Warriors' best players together at the same time And I just don't feel like he's really maximizing the team. And of course, like as I mentioned, there are so many caveats to this because they're up 3-1. They were up 3-0. They're probably going to win this tonight. The series is probably going to end tonight. But I just think it's worth noting because if this Warriors team declines a little bit, if they have to, you know, sacrifice Iguodala or some of the other key bench guys in this offseason where they have to re-sign Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, if they have to, you know, if the Cavs somehow get better from where they are now, if they make some trades and improve themselves, like, this team is going to be challenged, and the Cavs aren't going to go away tonight. And I just think it's worth noting that Steve Kerr is probably not doing the best job he could have coaching this team strategically.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like he wants to maximize the other things. You know, it's weird. Like, you look at your best lineups now, why wouldn't you play them? They're, like, almost too comfortable in the lineups that seem to do okay. And I think that goes back to one of the points we hammered last game, even though they won Game 3, and that was the fact that you take Steph Curry and Kevin Durant out at the same time. Why don't they play together? So ultimately, I think that's it's weird. That, I don't understand it because Steve Kerr is a terrific coach. There are just these like mishaps, and you know maybe they didn't have a chance to win Game 4, and it was just a bull rush that the Cavs had. But ultimately, you kind of think that some of the decisions that Steve Kerr makes, You could avoid, you know, after being up 8 to give up those 8 points back when you put Steph Curry and Kevin Durant on the bench at the same time. And I think the same thing goes when you don't run the pick and rolls. The things that have worked, the things that won you your first championship, and when they won that, maybe they got too comfortable thinking, oh, we can do so much more. We don't just have to rely on that.
Right. I mean, if you think back to that 2015 finals, and this is, you know, this whole discussion about not playing the death lineup enough is something that Nate Duncan really explored with Danny Lure on his podcast just the other day. So I have to give some credit to them for talking about this. But I, you know, in the 2015 finals, the Warriors were down 2-1. And then I believe in Game 4, they started the death lineup. They started Harrison Barnes at the 4, Draymond at the 5, and they just went with it. And, you know, I think to me, it makes so much sense. You don't necessarily have to start it, but you should be pulling Zaza early and getting some first quarter death lineup minutes in. You should be, you know, then have one of Steph, like you've mentioned so many times throughout this series, you can't sit Steph Curry and Kevin Durant at the same time because you're losing your stars. And you have to have, you know, them out there because otherwise, you know, the offense is just not going to run correctly. And the Cavs will take advantage because, you know, they're going to have their stars out there. I mean, they have Kyrie and LeBron playing 40 plus minutes a game each, and the Warriors just aren't approaching that. So, It just bothers me and it confuses me because that's what really swung that 2015 series and that whole 2015 season was the unlocking of this incredible potential when you put Draymond Green at center. And I don't know, maybe Kerr is too worried about the physicality, but this is the finals. You get a 3-month break after this, and Draymond's still a young guy. Like, you got to push him. He can do it. You know Draymond Green is going to be up to the physicality of the game. I mean, if there's one guy you're not gonna worry about on this Warriors team in terms of that, it's probably Draymond Green. So, you know, his intensity is going to be really high. It doesn't make sense to me. I feel like this was probably avoidable. Maybe you can't beat the Cavs when they shoot as well as they have, but I feel like just this nervous feeling that I think everybody has right now regarding this series for the Warriors, I think it was avoidable.
Absolutely, but that brings me to my point, which is the second topic as we transition, and it's what you already kind of mentioned, is the series over tonight? Do the Warriors win at Oracle at 9 Eastern on ABC? They're an 8.5, an 8.5 point favorite tonight at home.
I think they are going to win. I mean, you know, as much as I'm sort of railing against Kerr's coaching job because I think he's just not not doing the easy stuff, the bread and butter. He still has a great team. He still has a system that has worked for 3 years and made them, you know, really one of the best, if not the best, 3-year runs regular season wise, not you know, championship wise, excuse me. But, you know, this is one of the best teams ever, and really we're in the middle of a dynasty right now. I think they're going to put it away. I mean, they have so much talent. Kevin Durant, I was a little bit nervous about him because I thought with all the hullabaloo about his free agency decision this offseason. I thought he might come in and be a little bit nervous during this series and maybe struggle a little bit in the tight spots, but he's been good. He was a killer down the stretch of Game 3. The thing that does make me hesitate a little bit in picking the Warriors pretty confidently to win Game 5 is just that the Cavs have gotten better every single game. I mean, their offense especially has improved every time. They've improved their field goal percentage, and they've taken more threes. That's another thing that John Schumann noted in his piece. And the Cavs offense is just better when they take threes. It shows that they're getting the ball movement that they want. It shows that they're not forcing shots in the mid-range or at the rim that they really shouldn't take. You know, I think they're starting to figure out the Warriors' defense a little bit and places where they can abuse them. And so that trend makes me a little bit nervous because I think I trust Lou at this point to adjust better to a series than I trust Kerr. I trust Kerr to put together a better game plan. He's got more talent on his team. But right now, I mean, Ty Lue is showing us what he can do as a coach, and I've been really impressed. So I'll say Warriors, I'm pretty confident, are going to win, but I would not be shocked if the Cavs won this one on the backs of more huge performances from LeBron James and Kyrie Irving because they've just been phenomenal.
For some reason, it feels like the pressure is off the Cavaliers. And you know, while they have a lot to lose, they also, you could kind of look at it the other way. They don't have anything to lose. They're going to come out with this reckless abandon, this physicality that they had in game four. And I agree, they've gotten better every single game. There's no question about it. And, you know, I know the Cavaliers coming in the series felt pretty confident. They knew how to guard this Warriors team. And, well, while they thought so, they were probably incorrect because, well, there's Kevin Durant on this team. And now they've maybe figured that out. Maybe let him get going, but you got to stop Steph Curry somehow. Be physical with him. You know, make him, you know, finding his spots. Make it hard on him. And game five, I think, is important because if the Cavaliers win tonight, then you're really talking about some pressure situations because then you got game six at home on Thursday in Cleveland. And, you know, you would like to think the Cavaliers are favorites to win that game, and then all of a sudden, Game 7. Now, I don't want to get ahead of myself, because I also, like you, believe the Warriors will win tonight and close out the series. But the Warriors can't afford the Cavaliers to get off to a hot start just like they did in Game 4. Because then you quiet the crowd, and then the first quarter, like I said earlier, has been, in some degree, the deciding factor who wins this game. Now, of course, it sounds crazy, but whoever gets off to the hot start and scores a ton of points, which has been the play so far in the series, tends to, you know, it leans heavy towards winning the game. And overall, I think the Warriors are going to have to come out with that same, you know, same mentality that the Cavs had in Game 4 and get the crowd behind them. Because, you know, then when Oracle gets crazy like that and the Warriors are hitting all those shots, the Cavs really can't do anything, despite LeBron being as good as he is. And it's funny, Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving have not lost an elimination game yet. And that's absurd to me. Because they weren't really part of the 2015 series, you know, as that series went on and the Warriors won. And then last year you had the three elimination games. And then, of course, game four this year. There's something about Kyrie Irving just getting going. I think Kevin Love has been spectacular this series. He had a bad shooting game in game three. And it's funny to think, if he has a good shooting game, maybe they win game three and we're looking at a 2-2 series. I think this game is going to be close. It'll be a level-headed, exactly what we wanted from the finals. I do think the Warriors pull out in the end. But I don't think it's a sure thing, kind of like you were saying. And LeBron James right now is just on a whole different planet. And I feel like we say that every single episode. And we've been saying it for 4 or 5 years. But another, you know, 30-point triple-double, you can kind of pencil that in, as crazy as it is. 32 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists in game four. When he has the ball in his hand, this is a completely different offense than when Kyrie has the ball in his hand. I'm sure you saw that tweet. I forget who it was now, but they broke down the footage where you had that pick and roll.
It was Ben Falk, I think. He's got a great new blog, by the way, for basketball strategy. It was Ben Falk, I think. Ben C. Falk is his name on Twitter.
Yeah, that whole breakdown of how Kyrie didn't, you know, ran that pick and roll, didn't work out, and then of course LeBron ran it and JR was wide open in the corner. That stuff just is crazy. And I think LeBron's ready for this challenge, and it should be a terrific game tonight on Monday night in Oracle at 9 Eastern on ABC.
You know, generally, I think you're absolutely right. Generally speaking, I don't like when sports pundits and everybody tries to sort of get inside the minds of competitors, because I think you can never really know what somebody's thinking or how they're feeling or how they'll deal with a situation, or, you know, whether they're nervous, whatever, whether they are choking or whether they just missed a shot. I mean, it's that sort of stuff is pretty reductive analysis, and it usually is just results-based, not process-based. But I think we've seen enough of these two teams playing each other in the finals to know that this Cleveland team is just incredibly mentally resilient. And I don't necessarily think the Warriors – you could say the same for the Warriors. Like, the Warriors – are capable of coming back from big deficits within games, and they've done so this year at a rate higher than any other team by far. I think they've won something like 40% of the games in which they were down by 15 plus, which is just an insane number. That's courtesy of Chris Herring, I think, for 538.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think when you're talking about this team, the Warriors, that is, from a series standpoint and from a point where once the Cavs start to beat them up a little bit, this Warriors team has a tendency to crumble. I mean, they did it last year. We saw exactly how Game 4 felt, where the Cavs were just completely overwhelming the Warriors from a physical perspective. That's how the last three games of last year's finals felt.
Yeah.
And, you know, I agree with what you said earlier, is that, you know, if Kevin Love hits a couple more three-point shots, or even if Kyrie Irving hits a couple more three-point shots, we're probably looking at a 2-2 series right now. And if that's the case, I mean, then it's completely up for grabs, and we're talking about this, you know, this whole dialogue about how the Warriors are unbeatable and this postseason has just been a display of their dominance. I think we're talking about all of this in a really different way. So, you know, I think going back to that mental resiliency, I think the Cavs clearly have it. I mean, LeBron is not scared of anyone. And I know, you know, as I mentioned earlier, like, you don't want to speculate about what a guy is thinking, but I think it's pretty clear that LeBron is totally at peace with his performance in this series. He has a certain calmness to him in this series, and you know, he's always had that in his game. I don't know if anybody on earth can take LeBron James out of this mode that he's in right now, where he's just in complete control of this game. And, you know, I think if you're a Warriors fan, you got to be a little bit nervous about this game, because what we saw in Game 4 is exactly what we saw last year in last year's finals, when the Cavs were on their long comeback. I mean, that sort of physicality is just going to cause problems for Golden State. And, you know, again, I still think they'll win, but I just think it's you got to be a little bit cautious about predicting a big Golden State win, because, as I mentioned earlier, the Cavs have gotten better and more accustomed to this Warriors team every single game. And I think, you know, obviously we're at 3-1, we were 3-1 last year, so there's probably a little bit of added speculation in regards to this Warriors team, because, you know, we normally would expect this series to just end tonight with no questions asked. It's a gentleman's sweep. We've seen it a million times. But because this Cavs team is just so strong mentally, and because they just seem to have this weird physical advantage over the Warriors at times, I still think there's a chance that they could pull off at least a Game 5 win and send it back to Cleveland.
Yeah, it was funny. I was watching NBA TV yesterday, and they were doing a lot of the media stuff, you know, the player interviews and then practices at the facilities of the Warriors. And it was weird. I was watching the Cavs practice just for a tad as the broadcasters were, you know, commentating over whatever they were talking about. And LeBron had this weird smirk on his face, and he looked right at the camera, and it was like a really scary, like, smile. It, like, wasn't a full smile, it was just a little smirk, and I was like, oh, God. But, you know, I'm probably overplaying that a little bit. But overall, yeah.
He knows.
He, in NBA history, he is averaging the most points ever by any player in elimination games. It's actually over 32 points. I believe it's 32.5. He's shooting like 46%, 10.8 rebounds per game, and over seven assists. And I think he's like 11. Is he 11-8? I got to double check that stat. But he's ridiculous in elimination games, and so is Kyrie Irving now. And I agree. It's going to be a really fun game. And I got to ask this. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I got to ask this. If the Cavaliers win tonight, are we going to see a Game 7 in Oracle?
I mean, we're diving into so many hypotheticals here, but it's a fun conversation to have. And I'll say this: I think this series is either going to end in 5 or going to end in 7. I think that is probably the case, because I just cannot imagine it's possible, but it's hard to imagine a scenario in which the Cavs win tonight in Oracle, where they've lost by, you know, 20 or plus or whatever it was the first two games of the series, and they don't, you know, pull it together and win again on their home floor. It's just hard to imagine that situation. And I'm getting excited just thinking about it. I mean, I know how hard it's going to be for the Cavs to win this game. I really think that this one is going to be basically like a Game 7 like effort level. Actually, the guy we mentioned earlier, Ben Falk, he put together at some point, a little bit of an analysis of why Game 7 tend to be lower scoring. I think it was included in one of his other pieces about why the playoffs are different than the regular season. And it's just because there's such a high intensity level on defense, because it's a do-or-die situation, that it just lowers – it naturally lowers the scoring, because defense can be – you know, you can just have that extra boost, that extra kick in your step on defense when you really, you know, when it really means the most. And I think we're going to see that from both teams tonight, because I know these Warriors do not want to go back to Cleveland in the same situation where they were last year. And I know the Cavs obviously will do whatever they can to keep this series going. So I think it's just, it's going to be awesome. I think we might see a bit of an uglier, a slower, maybe a lower scoring game than the first four have been. But I think it's going to be incredible nonetheless.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think the Cavaliers feel like they have much to lose at this point. Now, of course they do, but they have that reckless mindset. And the physical play is certainly getting to the Warriors. Now, I expect the Warriors to come out hot as well. I think my key is what everybody is mostly saying, and that's how the first quarter is. I mean, I don't know if you have a different observation with the Cavaliers on what they need to do if they want to win this game, but ultimately it's been how you start. And I think there is maybe a tweak there if you have a slower and maybe a low-scoring game like you did Game 7 of last year, where it was just kind of grit back and forth. So no one could really take a commanding lead in that game. And maybe that's what we have tonight, but I think it's crucial for both teams to really get off to good starts. If the Cavaliers can, you know, pick up where they left off in Game 4, I expect them to win tonight. But ultimately, I think the crowd behind Oracle and the Warriors is going to be really good. It's always a good place to play if you're the home team, and it should be another instant classic. And it's incredible. We felt so defeated. We were talking about the off season after Game 3 and one game. I don't know if it's because they won in the fashion that they did. They scored 137 points on the league's best defense, or if it's just because LeBron James is on the team.
They could have probably put up one.
But that's the other point I want to bring up that makes me a little worried about the Cavaliers tonight is they have to set records to beat this Warriors team, right?
Yeah,
they have to score 49 points in the first quarter. They then have to score 86 in the first half. Both are NBA Finals records to beat this team. I think they were 12 points shy of the all-time scoring mark in NBA Finals in a game. And that's a little concerning, too, I have to say, if you're the Cavaliers. And maybe you just had one of those crazy games where you're not going to lose because of a Kyrie and LeBron performance, and you just set records on your way. Because let's be honest, I don't think the Warriors played bad offensively. They scored 116 points. They didn't shoot great from three, but they still found many of the easy looks that they had gotten in the first three games. Their defense just was just awful.
Well, I think, to me, if we're talking about keys to victory for this game, for the Warriors, I'm looking at, you know, I think the onus is really on the Warriors to make changes, and I don't know if they will. It's hard to know right now whether Steve Curry is going to be willing to change up his lineups, his rotations. You know, the only change he's made so far, I think he played Ian Clark maybe less in Game 4. You know, there hasn't been much. He's sort of just stuck with the system, which is a great system, of course. But I think for me, from the Warriors' perspective, they just got to play the death lineup more. I know that Kerr has reservations about it. I partially understand him. I know he doesn't want Draymond to be too taxed physically, but I just think there's no excuse for not playing your best players at the same time. And you know, the talent difference when you have Iguodala on the floor versus Zaza Pachulia is just incredibly huge. It's a totally different game, and they've been so much better in this. They were somehow still, you know, +9 when Iguodala was on the floor in Game 4. So, you know, clearly when he's out there and they have those similar lineups, it has a huge effect. And I think when Draymond Green plays center, there's something like not giving up 90 points per possession, even without the death line necessarily in there. So, players just have to get the death lineup in more often. And I don't know how they do it, but it's just got to be done. They have to get their best players on the floor. And if they don't do that, then Steve Kerr is really costing his team, you know, he's not costing them the championship, but he's costing them a solid chance at the championship. So, you know, I think that is just the biggest thing that needs to happen for the Warriors going forward.
Yeah, that's really what they need to implement to win this game. You don't want to play around with the schemes now. You got to put your best players on the floor when it matters. And I think that goes for the Cavs as well. It's hard to tell LeBron, hey, we got to play you 47 minutes tonight or whatever it be. But the Cavaliers are a surprising +6 in the series when LeBron has been on the floor. That's pretty darn good. And I thought his role players were pretty good in Game 4. You know, Richard Jefferson, I thought, played pretty well. They didn't score a ton of points, but they hit the shots when they needed to. You know, Kyle Korver, 1-for-2. Darren Williams, 2-for-3. Shumpert, 1-for-1. And Richard Jefferson, 2-for-4. That's who you got to have. You got to somehow, when you have the bench unit on the floor, You got to have them draw even, or maybe just a minus four or a minus six, because that's that you got to keep them in. And LeBron, who played 41 minutes in game four, you're going to look at a 45 to 46 minute game tonight. And I think it's going to be, like we've said many times, it's going to be a terrific game. It's going to come down to little things and which team maybe hits more shots, especially the three ball. The Cavaliers, of course, setting a record with 24 threes in a game as well. That is crazy, and that record in the finals, of course. And I expect Steph Curry to come out with a fire, too. We were kind of harping on him. He really needs to play well in Game 5, or we could be going back to Cleveland for a very, very big Game 6.
The last thing I want to mention in regards to this Cleveland team and what they need to do is, you mentioned making shots, and of course that's important because you make shots, you score points. It's a fairly simple equation there. But I think that what really is important for this Cavs team in terms of why it's even better for most teams, it's even better for the Cavs than it is for most teams to make shots early and often, because when they make shots, they're able to set up their transition defense. And the Warriors were averaging, here's my final, I promise, John Schumann stat for you. He's just done a great job on covering game four. But the Warriors were averaging 27 points per game in transition the first three games of the series. And in game four, they only scored 9 transition points. So clearly, when the Cavs make shots like they did, and when they get to the free throw line, another critical part of the game for them, like they did, it allows them to set up their defense. It allows them to anticipate the half-court sets that the Warriors are prone to falling into, and it sort of eliminates that chaos in transition that leads to so many Kevin Durant and Steph Curry buckets. So I think that is another huge thing to watch, because if you prevent that transition offense, it really hurts the Warriors, because they really thrive on, you know, causing that chaos and making a few buckets. And then all of a sudden the Oracle crowd is going absolutely insane and you can't hear yourself think. I think if they can just avoid those sorts of runs, and really it's going to be done through making shots, the Cavs definitely have a pretty good chance to win this game.
It's amazing how a game can swing in just one game. Game four now puts some pressure on the Warriors. Of course, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson feeling the most of it, and Steve Kerr. Again, should be a terrific game. I don't know if you have any last thoughts, Matt. I know you just hammered home a great one.
That's all I got. I'm spent.
Yeah. And how about this? We get another day of basketball. That's all I asked for.
I know. I'm so excited for this game tonight. And, you know, I try not to root for teams too much if I don't have an involvement, but I think I just naturally am hoping for the Cavaliers to win, because I've been saying all postseason that I want to see the Warriors tested. And, you know, they got a little bit lucky with injuries on the other side. I think that Spurs series probably goes at least 6 games if the Spurs don't lose Kawhi Leonard in game one and then end up losing that game in tragic fashion. And, you know, I'm excited to see somebody finally put these Warriors to the test. We still haven't seen a really, you know, that game three, you could definitely qualify as a really close game late, but there were some weird anomalies happening with how the Cavaliers treated that game. I think the Warriors proved that they could do it in a close game, but I'm really intrigued to see how it plays out tonight. If this ends up being a knockdown, drag it out affair, which I expect it to be with the Game 7 level of intensity, I'm really pumped to see how these two teams face off one more time.
Yeah, and I also want to say this. People reacting to the Warriors getting blown out, it's crazy that it's like the end of the world for them. And I know you and I have both kind of harped on them. They won 15 straight games in the playoffs, let alone, I don't know what their streak was going in before, but it was probably a couple of games they were playing really well.
I don't think they've lost with all four of their with their entire big four starting since February 2nd or something like that.
Right, and that's of course with injuries and stuff that have happened, but still some ridiculous run. I mean, that's like up with the Cavaliers and the Lakers runs that, you know, were 33 and what, 27, like those crazy runs that have happened in the past. They have been remarkable. I agree, though,
with you. Yeah, that Heat run from 2012 or whatever it was.
I agree with you, though. It's fun to see the Warriors finally be tested, and I think this will be yet another test for them. I expect a great LeBron game. I expect great Kevin Durant, Steph Curry game. It should be fun. So with that, I'm going to sign us off unless you have one last thing.
My one last thing is that you can be sure to follow us on SoundCloud. Yes. And listen to our podcast there. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes. We're available through your podcast app on your phone. We hope you listen to us very often. I really enjoyed this From the Car podcast, which is, again, when there's nothing else for me to do, you know, it really limits my little ADD action going on when I can just focus on nothing other than driving straight forward and talking on the phone. It makes I-57 a little more exciting.
Game 5 tonight, 9 Eastern on ABC, in the Bay, at Oracle. Game 5.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting pumped right now. Golden State up 3-1 in the series, as you all know. Nick Baldessari, Matt Cilic, our 25th episode, a milestone we have finally reached here in Season 2, Episode 14. As Matt said, check us out on iTunes, Twitter, SoundCloud. We're all over the place. Hope you guys get a chance to listen to this before the game. Take it easy. This is all from us here at From the Corner for now.